This is what people want. This is what I want. Now, which one of you is going to go out and get it for me?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Body Slam Podcast right here at Gerwick.net. This is Atlee Green, and the man himself is back in the saddle.
That's right, Roderick Strong is in the house.
That's right, Todd Graham is here, folks. You know, I've missed you.
You know, I missed doing this, and apparently you told me about our little topic that we're going to talk about later on that I guess, without saying a word, mind you, I've already drawn the ire of some of our fans.
Well, I actually mentioned on the last episode of the Body Slam Podcast that we're going to be debating the Attitude Era, and I gave them my stance and how you, your stance, your negative stance, and got a few private messages on the Twitter handle there, and like an email or two about, you know, how could he possibly not like the Attitude Era, and I was like, you know what, I know some of the reason, but I actually want to hear the whole thing for the first time as everybody else is hearing it, so that way I can kind of let it percolate and respond.
Are these the same people that think Dixie Carter is good for TNA?
No, I would hope not.
You know, or TNA is good at all.
I hope not.
Yeah, but once again, we'll get to that.
Yes, and by the way, just like your opinion on the Attitude Era might draw the ire of a few people, my opinion on the whole TNA debacle is going to draw the ire of quite a few people. So it'll be interesting to see what unfolds here. And, of course, the guy who really doesn't say anything, Ryan Andrews, a.k.a. Shane Daly, is not here with us today.
He's going to continue to say nothing.
Exactly. He's actually going to check out Guardians of the Galaxy, the new Marvel movie that's coming out actually at midnight this evening. I'm actually seeing it tomorrow afternoon, but he opted to see that with his dream girl. So.
Oh, you mean that first Marvel flop movie? All right.
Yes. it very well could flop.
If it's actually, not this one, it'll be Ant-Man for sure.
It's tracking right now between 60 and 70 million, but we'll see how that unfolds ultimately.
Didn't we make a bet on one of these about the number it was going to draw in?
I don't recall.
I think it was a high number, but it wasn't high enough. Like what did the last Captain America movie do?
Oh, it did 93 million opening weekend.
Opening weekend.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm thinking let's do it right now. Just get it out of the way. I'm thinking opening weekend for Guardians of the Galaxy won't do over 60.
I'm going 63.
63? All right. I'll bet $1. It'll go under that.
Okay. We'll see how that unfolds.
Well, Hercules did what, 30?
Oh, yeah. The thing is, though, I mean, Hercules has been done to death.
But not with the Samoans.
And plus, it's Brett Ratner, you know, so I don't think the movie going public has faith in Brett Ratner. But enough movie talk. Let's talk about what you listeners at Gerwick.net want to talk about. Professional wrestling.
Football, all right.
Football, yes. Football. But let's talk about the big news of the day. The WWE, via the conference call, announced that as of June 30th, the WWE Network has 700,000 subscribers, which is 33,000 up from April, when the initial number was announced as 667,000 subscribers. However, there are some interesting notes that came out of the conference call about the WWE Network. The WWE Network is also going to offer some more pricing options, because right now they're currently doing, you know, $9.99 a month locked in for a 6-month commitment, but they're also offering, if you don't want to be locked in for 6 months straight, they're also offering a price point of $19.99 per month. So if you just want to pay 1 month, that's all you pay. It's $19.99. But if you want to be locked in for 6, you pay $9.99.
A question on that.
Okay.
Did they release at all if that $19.99 is going to be recurring monthly? Like, if you sign up for, like, when I sign up for stuff and it says sign up for a month, what I'm hoping is, by default, when I sign up for a month, that when the month is over, they're going to stop banging my charge card.
No, that's what this pricing point is going to be, that you pay $19.99 per month, if you just want to pay 1 month and that's it. But if you want to be also, you pay $9.99 a month for locked in for 6 months, or you can actually pay a one-time fee for 6 months of $59.95. It's billed all at once.
That's a 5 cent discount.
It is, but the thing is, that's something I might rather do is because me personally, when I do my charge card account, have the wife and I have the debit card for the bills and everyday spending, but we also have the money, the other debit card for leisure, fun things, and sometimes when we get to put money in that particular account, we load it back in just to keep the bills nice and even, balance the checkbook and whatnot. And actually, after 2 months, I forgot to put enough money back in the leisure accounts to pay for WWE Network.
Fail.
So, yes, and I figured they were going to charge the card anyway, and I have an overdraft fee, but they didn't charge the card. So when I put money back in the account, and I figured I could just notify them, hey, money is here, charge it, I had to sign up all over again. So, and I had to re-sign up for it in May as if I was a new subscriber. So my six-month commitment started in May.
Mm-hmm.
My initial one started in September. February was like everybody else's did, but my second 6 month, if you will, started in May, so it's going to go a little past SummerSlam. So I think that's why WWE is doing a $19.99 per month for those who don't want to do 6 months, simply because they really don't want to lose money like they were.
Right.
Because I think a lot of people did the same thing I did, and maybe forgot to put money in the account and realize, oh, we're not making money off of this. but there's also some other information that came out of this conference call. Again, you can pay $59.95, mm-hmm. billed at once, which, it will also save them. I mean, once you pay that, you're definitely locked in 100%. No reoccurring charge, and you're locked in, and that's a bigger chunk of money all at once. However, I think one of the big stories is, besides the cancellation, is between April 7th and June 30th, they added 161,000 subscribers, mm-hmm. but they also had 128,000 cancellations. So that's a big job. And as you said, when we were doing show prep, that those are probably just the people that wanted to pay for Mania and nothing else.
Right.
But I think another big story here is the network's going to be available in 170 countries. As of August 12th, with the key countries being Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, Singapore, Mexico, Spain, Norway, Sweden, and Finland. And they're targeting the United Kingdom for October. And I think that's going to be the big deal, because right now, domestically, they have 700,000 subscribers. And the number I think they need 1.5 or 1 million subscribers in order to break even. So they're definitely losing money on this venture right now. But international assistance is going to be big.
Yeah.
It's going to be huge.
And the break-even point isn't domestic. It's total.
Exactly.
At this point, I know it's going to cost a bit of money for them to get into the foreign market, but the infrastructure is there. Like, they've got everything figured out in terms of the streaming as well as the, the connectivity. Like, there, except for a few glitches right at the beginning, there really hasn't been a significant issue with the WWE Network. Not to mention the part that you mentioned to me earlier about, I guess, Canada is going to be using it as an actual channel.
Yes, as of August 12th, it's going to be an actual channel on Rogers cable network. Through their Sportsnet provider, it's going to be an actual channel on that, which is actually what WWE wanted initially, WWE Network to be. It's going to be an actual cable channel, but they won't have, the on-demand options, because it's going to be on TV. It should be just the live programming that will be constantly coming out.
Right.
But still, that's a big step forward for Canada. I mean, you're giving people more access to the network. And the WWE is really hoping that they can get a million subscribers by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But they also want to do 2 to 4 million going forward. And I think some people think these numbers are bad, but I don't think so. And I'm going to tell you, in my opinion, if you look at Netflix, which is probably the godfather of network streaming online, and they currently announced like 55 million subscribers. And Hulu actually just announced they have 6 million subscribers to their network, and that's actually up 1 million subscribers from last year, where in 2013 they had 5 million. So, I mean, this is pretty good considering, you know, Hulu is primarily past and present television shows that were on TV. They also have their own exclusive TV shows that can only be seen on Hulu. But they're also starting to filter in movies and documentaries as well, where Netflix is all movies, all TV shows, it's everything. It's a bigger variety on Hulu and Netflix. So I think that's why you see bigger numbers with those platforms, where WWE, it's just wrestling.
Right.
So you really have to be a wrestling fan. I mean, WWE doesn't have something for everybody. Hulu does. Netflix does.
Right, exactly.
So I don't really think people should be expecting Netflix or even Hulu-like numbers at this stage of the game. Now, in my opinion, if they do not have 1 million subscribers at the end of the year, with the international rollout, I think they're in trouble. And they're expecting, as my notes here at GirlRick.net, I want to thank Mark Middleton, by the way, for doing the conference call notes for GirlRick.net. I guess he mentioned as those are targeting the UK for October. Besides America, besides North America, that's WWE's biggest audience.
Right.
And I don't know why that wasn't a priority. I mean, the UK should have been first. Besides, it should be North America and UK at launch in February.
Right, exactly.
I mean, there may be some logistical issues that prevent that from happening, but I think out of all these other countries listed, like New Zealand, Spain, Mexico, Singapore, UK should be the priority because that's their biggest audience.
At the same time, you also got to remember, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. And think about the minor issues that we had in the States. You've got to imagine that if the minor issues had been also, you know, you add international distribution to the UK, you've got to imagine that the distance may have exacerbated some of the problems. That would lose you more fans. Like, if somebody signed up the first day and they're like, oh, this is awesome, and they didn't test it, you know, for international travel, then they're going to go, oh, this is terrible, mate, and that'll be the end of it. You know, so maybe, I mean, granted, the UK, it should be the first other country that they poured it out to, but maybe at launch it may not have been the best idea, and maybe that's why they didn't do it.
You know, thinking about that now, Tard, you might be right, because if you look back at the night after WrestleMania, the episodes of Raw, mm-hmm. It's primarily a European crowd
right.
that stays for those Raws, and they have a different taste in wrestling than we do. I mean, when Paige came out and went over at AJ for the Divas title, she got a superstar reaction. You would have thought she was Hogan, and that was it. No one popped for her after that. And it wasn't just because she was British, it's because they're familiar with her NXT. They like NXT. It's over in England, and it's getting over in the States. But they like different wrestlers for different reasons. They like different things that the Americans don't like. So I think when you do WWE Network over there, you have to tailor it to their tastes. I don't think you can have the platform that we have right now.
Right.
I mean, I think you have to put a lot of British events on there, like British house shows, British pay-per-views. They got to put a lot of that on there.
Well, I mean, obviously, the UK, you know what? That might actually have been intentional on WWE's part, because if you'll notice, they got like the insurrections and the rebellions and all that stuff, but they neglected to put up the European Rampage pay-per-views, the Albert Hall shows. They neglected to put those up there probably because they're going to use them as a draw for launch in the UK, which, I mean, if it's there already, like, does it matter that now it's available, now that it's in the UK, or, you know, because the contents, you can see it anytime you want? What does the WWE own in terms of intellectual property or purchased library that the Brits are going to find important? Because the last I checked, most of the stuff that Vince owns is, like, you know, NWA, the South, Florida, the Carolinas.
AWA, I mean, they're looking at getting the Memphis library eventually. I mean, they have filmed a lot of WWE events over in England.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's definitely something that they should tailor it slightly towards a British taste because they're going to want that. I mean, this be just like us. I mean, I think the reason why the network number is not as high as it could be right now is because, and actually Frank D. from the Gerwick Report made a good point about this, but made a good point on this, and he hit the nail right in the head. They are not giving us the nostalgia they promised us.
Now
they're not.
Now what I mean let's dissect that for a second. What's the nostalgia we're looking for? Is it because they don't have Nitro on there yet? Is it because they don't have Thunder?
That is the big thing. People want Raws and Nitros on the network now. They, once a week or once every other week, they do put an episode of Monday Night Raw on the network, a brand new episode. However, it's from the early 90s, you know, 93, 94, 95, but they put it out of order. They'll put one episode from 95, one episode from 93, and it's not in chronological order. I mean, if they're going to put episodes of Raw or any show, it should be in order.
Now, wait a minute. Let me interject. Because almost every day since the network debuted, they have been airing Raw in its correct chronology. For instance, and this, I have already found a way, to acquire footage from the network, and I'm already up to about halfway through the 1995 season. They have the complete 1993, 94, and they're halfway through 95 already on the stream as well as the video on demand. Now, I agree that it's weird that they're putting out, like, all right, when the Warrior died, they put out an episode from 96 with a Warrior and Goldust interaction. They put out episodes from, like, the 2000s sporadically. But at the same time, they are also releasing all of the old ones in order. So eventually, they're going to catch up. And now that it's, what is it, July? Tomorrow will be August, for those of you who didn't realize when we're recording this. Tomorrow will be August, which means that they've been doing this 95 stuff for quite some time. I think they just hit the summer. When did Nitro debut?
Nitro debuted Labor Day of 1995.
And pardon me for this, but what month is Labor Day in?
September.
September. Okay, so here we go. How much do you want to bet they did what they did with the retro Raws, like releasing them one, two, three at a time, to coincide with the actual release of Nitro? Because if they're only in the April, May months of the 1995 year of Raw, that means around the time they get to September, they might, well, first of all, they're going to start debuting the Monday Night War when? In August, right?
Correct.
They're going to debut that in August. You can bet your bottom dollar that the moment that Nitro actually appears on the timeline, that they'll start airing Nitros back-to-back with those retro Raws. Mark my words, that's what they're going to do.
The thing is, I mean, it's a very good idea and a very good point, but I don't see what you necessarily gain. I don't see the big gain from that, because when you look at the fans that watched Nitro and Raw when wrestling was hot, I guarantee you the vast majority of those fans, if you said, hey, do you remember the Monday Night Wars? They're not going to know what that means.
No.
Only us hardcore fans that surf the net and go to Gerwick.net every day, those are the people that know what the Monday Night War means. I mean, if somebody that doesn't go to the net, hasn't watched wrestling in a while, sees an ad for WWE Network and goes, you know what, that looks pretty cool. I'll watch some of the old Raws and Nitros from when I was in high school when it was really popular with Austin 316 and NWO and all that stuff. You know, they're going to start looking for, they'll put their $9.95 down. They'll start looking for Raws. And even though they'll have access to that content with a label, Monday Night Wars, they might not know what that means.
And not only that, but for those fans of the Attitude Era, and I know there are a lot of them, and to a certain point, myself included, and I'll explain later, but the Attitude Era really isn't represented on the network. And I guess that's probably what you meant by the nostalgia we were looking for. Because, I mean, when you really think about it, yeah, all the pay-per-views are there, but the Raws aren't there. There's like sporadic handful of Raws. There's no Nitro. There's no ECW during that time. There's no Thunder. Which might be a good thing. No Thunder. No sporadic SmackDowns. But I mean, it almost you're the people who have that perception are probably correct if that's what they consider nostalgia. As far as I'm concerned, the nostalgia I'm looking for are episodes of Superstars from 1992.
Bingo.
You know, like, absolutely. That's what I want. Like, they're like, we got Saturday Night's Main Event from the 80s. That's nice.
I think they're only up to 1989 right now.
Yeah. It was weird. On rollout for the Saturday Night's Main Events, they got up to 86 and then stopped. For some reason, it had to do with the free week thing. And that reminds me, the Monday Night Wars, that one episode that they previewed of the Monday Night War, it aired at 11 o'clock after Raw on some random night right at the beginning of that free week. It is not, and I repeat, it is not on demand yet. Like, if you missed that one show,
right.
You don't see it.
Which I thought was weird because they did the same thing for the Best of Monday Nitro a couple of weeks ago. It aired immediately following Raw on the network, and it is actually in the on-demand library.
Right.
But the Monday Night War thing was not. Now, did you watch it?
No, I missed it.
I was curious if it was a one-hour condensed version of the DVD they released.
No.
Or was it like a newly produced show for the network?
Well, I didn't get to see it when it ran, and I waited a day or two to make sure, you know, to see if it would come in, and it didn't. So I had to go download it. Which completely defeats the purpose. But I had to go download it, and I watched it. And you know what? It was damn good. It covered the early days. Like, they talked about Raw. They got to 95. Believe it or not, like, you would expect that. Well, all right, if they were going to do a well-thought-out, documentary-style, hour-long program about the Monday Night Wars, what do you think that first episode should have ended on?
First episode should have ended
what,
on?
What should have been the... Like, all right, it was the opening shot of the Monday Night Wars. What should have been the one thing they ended on?
You give me yours first, and I'll go after.
Luger! It should have ended on Luger, because that was the biggest thing. That was the biggest thing that happened. They spent the first half of the program setting the pace, which was WWE, Major League Conglomerate, NWA/WCW, just kind of floundering, 6:05 on Saturday afternoons, blah blah blah. I'm getting in the wrestling business, you know, the usual Ted Turner nonsense. Yes, a lot of recycled interviews, but some of those people aren't around anymore, so you got to take it. But it should have ended with Luger. It ended on Medusa. It was a very strange ending to the very first episode.
I would be inclined to agree with you because what a lot of people don't remember, and I remember actually, you know, as a fan back in 95, on Superstars, which aired on Saturday afternoons, on Saturday before Monday Nitro, before the Saturday of Labor Day, Superstars promised that next week, the big hook for Watch Superstars was Lex Luger because they did a deal with the British Bulldog turned heel on Diesel. And at that time, British Bulldog and Lex Luger were it was a tag team. They were a tag team. So everybody was wondering, is Lex Luger to be a heel just like Davey Boy, or is he going to go his own way? And that was the big question. That was the hook of watching Superstars. So I remember, you know, then you had that was Saturday. Then you have Sunday. Then you have Monday. Luger shows up on Nitro. And... you know, the fan in me, not knowing what I know now, was thinking to myself, man, like, that's crazy. Lex Luger is going to be wrestling for WCW and WWF because they already advertised on Superstars. He's going to be on. He's going to explain. Is he with Diesel or is he with the British Bulldog? And, of course, I was watching Superstars that next Saturday with bated breath, waiting for Lex Luger, and nothing.
It turns out he was going with the competition.
Exactly. You know, so, but the thing is, I think the Monday Night Wars, they can't rely on that solely to get people into the Attitude Era, because you got to remember, Attitude Era, you know, we'll get into it a little bit more, but the 95, 96, and most of 97 was not the Attitude Era.
No.
So that's 3 years of the Monday Night Wars before the Attitude Era even existed.
Right.
So that's 3 years of... nostalgia that's not nearly as valuable as the stuff from late 97, 98, 99, 2000, 2001, you know, early 2002, maybe, depending on your opinion.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, and plus, I mean, even they had a hook just like telling people, hey, you know, were you a fan of wrestling back in, did you watch Raw and Nitro back in 1998? Were you a fan of the NWO? Were you a fan of DX and Austin 316? If you were, this is the show for you. But this is a conspiracy theory I've seen floated out there, and I've seen on various message boards, and I've seen it floated on the comment section at GoWork.net. And a lot of people are saying that the reason why the WWE has not fully delivered on the nostalgia that they promised is because they don't want people to realize how bad today's product is.
Well, it's too bad because it's all over the marketplace. If you want to know how bad the current landscape is, watch it. You know, like And keep in mind, and I just want to make this clear, I am actually okay with the direction they're taking right now. It all makes perfect sense. It's predictable as hell, but you know what? That's what wrestling is. You know how it's going to end. You just enjoy the chase. That's how it should work. You know, but a lot of people don't dig that. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't dig that because, and to drive the point home, and Steve Gerwig himself on the Gerwig Report podcast made a very good point. They made a Vicky Guerrero special on the WWE Network.
And they're going to put her in the Hall of Fame this year. You know they will.
Oh, of course. They advertised the death. Now, Vicky Guerrero is, whether you think she's entertaining or not, you know, I never really had a problem with the character. I got a kick out of it. She always got heat with the excuse me quote and whatnot, but she is not one of those characters that people are going to go out in droves to buy her action figure, buy her T-shirt, get her DVD, watch WWE Network, or pay. Oh, gee, well, that Vicky Guerrero special, that's going to make me buy WWE Network. Mm. I mean, I think that's the least. If you anything you put out there to say, hey, what's going to make people buy the network? A Vicky Guerrero special is not it.
No.
It's the furthest thing.
Now, granted, she lost a ton of weight.
It's anti-bait.
Now, granted, she lost a ton of weight and looks really good, and I wouldn't mind seeing the photo, the swimsuit special. But it's not going to draw. It's not going to draw in new people. And by the way, and I've been trying to think of a joke for the next podcast I'd be on, and now that I'm here, I spent all this time thinking, and I couldn't come up with one because one was already sitting right in front of my face. You know what was the most talked about moment on the WWE Network thus far?
What was that?
Pat Patterson.
Of course.
You know what?
That I know where you want to go with that, Todd. But
I've already been.
That is an entirely different subject that could take up an entire podcast.
Maybe next time.
That's ridiculous for a variety of reasons. But the WWE Network, I mean, it really all depends on taste as well. I mean, being a mega fan like myself and a pundit of professional wrestling. I mean, my reason to buy the network is the pay-per-views. I mean, I love professional wrestling, but the thing is, I am not. There are a lot of shows that I'm not paying $54.95 per show. Like Battleground, I can tell you the reason I bought the network is because of the monthly pay-per-views, the monthly specials. And if I get bored, I'll watch the stream. If I want to see a pay-per-view, I'll watch the matches. Like, for example, I almost didn't watch Battleground. The lineup did not appeal to me on any level whatsoever, and I had no plan of watching it. At the last minute, because my wife and I, at Sunday, we usually watch, True Blood, Falling Skies, The Last Ship, various shows on cable television. But the last minute, my wife was like, you know what, I'm going to bed early. And I was like, I'm just going to watch the network, and I'll watch Battleground. I'll watch the other shows, and she's feeling better. And besides the 2 out of 3 falls match, everything was kind of meh. But I think that speaks to somebody like me that's hard to please as a hardcore fan that for $9.99, I almost didn't watch that pay-per-view.
Right. That Sunday Night Raw wasn't very good.
Exactly. Perfect. I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, WrestleMania was good. Extreme Rules was good. I liked Payback a lot. Money in the Bank was fun. Battleground, I did not. I mean, it wasn't the worst pay-per-view by any means, but it was just boring. It was meh. And I almost didn't watch it. And that's a pay-per-view I wouldn't have paid for. I would have just read the results on GoWreck.net, and that's it. or if I really want, if there were reports of a really good match, like the Usos against the Wyatt family, I would have found it on YouTube.
Right.
And I think they got to make those shows better. I mean, they really do. I mean, they really got to say, okay, they're not even calling them pay-per-views anymore. They're calling them, quote, special events. And you got to give us a reason why they're special.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't – I mean, the writing, the producing, everything about that show simply screamed, don't even bother watching this show. It doesn't really count. Focus on SummerSlam.
Right.
That's what that show told me. And you can't have that when you're counting on people buying your network. Because the thing is, a lot of people are already wondering, is the network a failure? Is the network going to be canceled? I mean, there's a lot of layoffs, and it's just cutting $20 million from his payroll to make the network more feasible for his company. But WWE is all in on this.
Right.
They're not getting rid of this network anytime soon. They are all in, and they need to be all in because this is where the future is. And it's good to be in on the ground floor instead of playing catch-up when it becomes the norm.
Right.
Because if once... Because here's the thing. I mean, I have the Kindle Firebox.
Really?
And I love it. I love it. And we're considering getting rid of cable because it has all the shows we want to watch. It appears the next day. And it has WWE Network, which is how I usually watch it. I look through the Kindle Firebox, plug it right in my TV. And it's similar to like Roku or Apple TV and whatnot.
Right.
And that's where the future's heading. And more people are going to be getting rid of cable as these boxes catch on.
Right, and DVDs and Blu-rays are going right with them.
The Blu-ray and DVD sales are not what they once were.
Think about it. Now, this might be a little nerdy for some of you, but I have a rather large DVD collection. I think I clocked it at like 15,000 DVDs or something ridiculous. And
folks, I want to tell you right now, he's not lying. I've seen it.
Yes.
He's not lying. He's not even exaggerating.
The collection requires storage to a degree that which I didn't think I'd ever... I used to go to the video store, and I'd see the wall of wrestling titles, and be like, oh, I want to watch them all. And you fast forward 20 years, oh, I've got them all. You know, the part of me is dead now, but... I made the conscious effort because my friends used to joke. It's like, oh, yeah, well, Blu-ray is the next thing. You're going to convert everything to Blu-ray? Because I had converted everything from VHS to DVD. And I thought to myself, well, Blu-ray has X amount of space on them. You can get X amount of DVDs onto the space. And then I thought to myself, I'm like, that's going to cost thousands and thousands more dollars, not to mention the man hours. And I said, nah, the future is not in physical media. It isn't. It isn't anymore. So I said, rather than go the route of converting all of my DVDs to Blu-ray, I said, screw it. I found something online called the WDTV, also very similar to Roku or the Firebox, and I found out that up to 2 terabytes on an external hard drive, I could fill that hard drive with the DVD images and... I'd be able to watch them through the WDTV with the menus in the full quality, no conversion, no nothing. All I have to do is rip the DVD to this hard drive, and I can fit about 500 DVDs per hard drive. So that makes life a whole lot easier when your entire collection of 15,000 DVDs can fit on one shelf in your bedroom. The future of media in general is going to be cloud storage. There's already a wrestling promotion that was offering, and they asked their fans, would you rather do DVDs, Blu-rays, or would you rather us send you a pen drive with all the high quality stuff on it? And I'm just like, I would actually prefer the pen drive, to be honest with you, because that's the future. The future, the discs are dead.
I know, I completely agree with you, Todd, because you know I have quite the collection myself.
Absolutely.
You know, not nearly as big as yours, but I, you know, dabbled in tape trading, and shout out to crazybacks.org, by the way, you know, back in the day. And obviously, now that I have the WWE Network, I don't buy WWE wrestling DVDs anymore, kind of like the UFC. I have UFC Fight Pass, and because I have UFC Fight Pass, I don't buy UFC DVDs anymore because I think, why am I going to spend $15.99 or $19.99 on a physical DVD that's going to take up shelf space when it's going to be on the service I'm paying for.
Right, exactly. And here's the thing. I made this argument with Netflix because I used to watch something. I used to, like, right now I'm watching Dexter. I'm real big into Dexter. And I'm 8 years too late, but, you know,
This is true.
I'm just getting into it. And usually on Netflix, what I would do is I'd find a show I really like, and I'd go, okay, and I'd go download it, or I'd go buy the DVD or something, and then I'd have a physical copy of it. Now I'm just like, eh, forget it. And I used to do that specifically because Netflix would delete stuff from time to time. They would take stuff off without any notice. And I said, well, that stinks. You know, well, now I have to go out and get it. And I thought to myself, they got so many options. And this is the same for the WWE Network. They got so many options that even if they do take off something that I really like, I can find it now anytime I want. And who knows, it might come back. And besides, even if it doesn't, there's still a million other things I could watch. I will never starve for wrestling ever again.
And to kind of take your argument one step further, DVR service has expanded ridiculously over the last couple of years. I mean, when DVR with Comcast Xfinity first came out, you could only record two shows at a time, and you had to watch one of them. Now you record up to 10 shows, maybe more at the same time. I mean, I had one time 8 shows recording at the same time, and you could save a lot more shows.
Right. And
then you can, and if you even delete shows now, it goes in a separate folder that you can kind of bring them back later. And the thing is, I mean, I love Ring of Honor. I loved Ring of Honor's Best in the World. It actually increased my fandom for Ring of Honor.
Oh, incredible show. And shout out and shout out to the guys we know too, you know.
Exactly. Mikey Bennett, Brutal Bob Evans, who wasn't there, Trump Matt Hardy. Ciampa, absolutely. But the thing is, I DVR'd that show. Now, a couple of years ago, if I had the archaic version of DVR that Comcast was giving out, you wouldn't have that much storage. I mean, a high-definition 3-hour pay-per-view would take up maybe 20% of storage, if I'm not mistaken, if it was high def.
High def, yeah, absolutely.
But not now.
And you've got the X1 platform, right?
I mean, but this is before, I was speaking before X1.
Right, exactly.
But I have X1 platform now, and it barely takes up anything.
Well, yeah, because it's probably the thing is it's not that the files got smaller; it's that the hard drive got bigger.
Exactly.
You know, that, and it, since you can get a 2 terabyte hard drive in a thumbnail sized thing, you know, like they can do a whole lot more now.
Exactly. I think Ring of Honor is kind of ahead of the curve because you can now buy that show on DVD at their website, but you could also buy it on digital download as well. And correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, I don't think WWE does much digital downloading, like for events before the network.
Aside from the video on demand service, of course. But,
yeah.
But you can't, like, for instance, you can't download legally, by the way. You can't download anything from the WWE Network without getting some backdoor program that's ripping it off the site, and ripping it off would be the correct term. Whereas Ring of Honor is just like, look, we know there are bootleggers out there. We would rather our fans be able to see our stuff, and if they don't want to do it on some video on demand, which they do have. They have video on demand on their website. But rather than do that, they can go, you know what, if you want, you can just, here, for a small fee, you can download the show and take it wherever you want, even if you don't have the internet, you know. So I think that is definitely a plus. Beyond Wrestling is a big proponent of that, too, and I can't say enough good about those guys.
Actually, I'm thinking of checking out their show at the end of August.
I am so...
The battle for Providence, I think they're calling it?
No, the Battle of New England, I think. Bone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I am so... For those of you who don't know, go to lookmanofans.com.
Yeah, exactly.
If you go to their website and check out their stuff, they got a lot of really good stuff in their old archive, and they got a lot of really good stuff. Once they started doing live shows, they were actually the promotion that promoted Davey Richards versus Johnny Gargano for the very first time anywhere in the independents. And they have grown since then to their most recent show, American Rana 2014. I got to tell you, I haven't seen the show yet, and I don't really pay for wrestling anymore, if I'm being honest. I actually emailed the guy who runs Beyond Wrestling directly and said, I don't pay for wrestling. I'll pay for this. Tell me when it's available. Because just the information that I heard, you got Elgin versus Dickinson. Dickinson is one of the best independent talents that nobody knows. And of course, then there's one of PZW's friends there, Anthony Stone, the greatest ending to an I Quit match I have ever heard of in my life. I don't really know if I want to spoil it, but it's just too good not to mention, because once you hear it, you'll want to buy it. You know, but anyway, it's like those guys got the video on demand. Ring of Honor's got the video on demand. And if you don't mind a nice segue, because I think we've been talking about the network for too long.
Yes.
Ring of Honor, now that it is going to be the number two promotion in the company in the country, they are definitely ahead of the curve.
Agreed, and that is the perfect segue to talk about TNA Impact Wrestling. As the fans know, Spike TV has elected not to renew their contract with TNA Impact Wrestling. Therefore, at the end of October, TNA will no longer be on Spike TV. Now, there were rumblings that Spike TV was not going to renew their contract with TNA Wrestling because it has been very late. Because usually when television contracts, the fall lineups come out, Those are usually announced in April and May.
Right.
So it was weird that nothing was announced. But then the blunder of all blunders happened. Vince Russo emailed Taz and Jeremy Borash and Mike Today, about how they should put over certain things on television. He actually also copied Mike Johnson from PWI Insider as well, accidentally. So, of course, Mike Johnson told him, hey, you know, I'm going to publish this email if you don't admit that you work for TNA, because there were some rumblings for a long time that Russo was working for TNA. I mean, if you see the storylines, it was evident that Russo was working for TNA. I mean, there were rumblings he was working as a consultant. Russo actually denied it at one time, and he actually went so far to not only just deny it, but to call the fans out and call them idiots and marks and whatnot, making up all these rumors, and then it turns out, hey, he was working for TNA.
You better hope they're marks.
Oh, of course. And I knew he was working. As soon as I heard the rumor, I watched TNA again, and I knew it, because one of the trademarks of Vince Russo's booking is the absence of the payoff. Because what I mean by that is they brought in MVP as the investor, and they had the big match they made everybody pay for at Lockdown, where Team MVP won, Dixie Carter is out. And the MVP is going to change TNA for the better. 2 months later, he turns heel, and he's now going to be just like Dixie Carter for her own personal gain. Then it turns out, hey, Dixie Carter lost the right to wrestling operations, but she's still the president of TNA, and that makes you go, what the hell was the point of paying for Lockdown for? The whole point of Lockdown was so you wouldn't see Dixie Carter anymore. You advertise that, you so-called deliver that, and then boom. Dixie Carter is still around by some loophole.
And if we go back 1 second, I think you answered the question that Spike TV's been asking, why pay for Impact? Go ahead.
Exactly. I mean, because the thing is, I mean, it's been over like 7 years since they've been in business with TNA. And they even went so far as to pay a good chunk of the salaries. They actually paid some money for Sting's salary. They paid some money for Kurt Angle's salary. I mean, Kurt Angle's contract actually expires at the end of August. They paid some money for Hulk Hogan's salary, and they elected not to do that. So that told you right there, okay, they were losing interest in TNA. Plus, all the other stations have put their fall lineups. And I love how Dixie Carter is telling everybody that they walked away from Spike TV because Spike TV wasn't going to pay them money. I mean, if that's how you want to spin it, okay, but when you, I mean, any sensible business person will tell you that you don't walk away from a TV station when they're the only ones giving you food.
Right, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, nobody else is. I mean, here's the thing: the reason why TNA is gonna have a hard time getting back on TV, if at all, is because you know how many times wrestlers like Jeff Hardy, Rob Van Dam, Sting, and others have said in interviews, people ask them all the time, "Hey, where have you been? How have you been wrestling for so long?" And it's like, yeah, they have been wrestling in TNA, but nobody knows.
Right.
So, I mean, it's gonna be a hard fought battle for TNA. And I'll go ahead and talk.
Could Spike TV be to blame for this? Because, you know, whenever I the only few times I ever saw an Impact commercial were during those episodes of Raw when they thought they were competing with Raw. You know, like the January 4th Raw.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you why. Because Spike TV, they're not all in with TNA. They're more into Bellator. I see Bellator advertising all the time for TNA and from Spike TV.
Right.
And I've never seen any advertising they do for TNA Impact Wrestling. I mean, when it comes to Bellator, because remember, Viacom owns Spike TV, Viacom also owns Bellator, so they're all in on Bellator, not so much TNA. Plus, they realize that, hey, it's been 6-7 years, helped them pay for Hulk Hogan, we helped them pay for Sting, helped them pay for Kurt Angle, and they're not getting the job done. I mean, they've done everything they can for a promotion without buying it, and they realize now that, hey, if it hasn't made a dent by now, it never will.
Right, exactly. And that's why you got to look. I was worried when Sinclair Broadcasting purchased ROH because, you know, Kerry Silken, the old owner of ROH, he loved Ring of Honor. He cared about Ring of Honor. And he, you know, the only reason he sold Ring of Honor, I mean, besides the obvious, you know, the wrestling, how do you make $10 million in the wrestling business? You start with 20. So you got to imagine that he may have been losing some money, but at the same time, maybe he was breaking even. But the fact of the matter is running a wrestling promotion for over 10 years like Kerry did, it's got to be incredibly stressful, especially running however many live events per year, not to mention TV tapings and blah, blah. So they sold it to a network that was A, willing to buy, and B, willing to make it its flagship program. And honestly, the only reason anybody knows about Sinclair Broadcasting anywhere else in the world is because of Ring of Honor. You know, and not only that, but it's like they are all in with Ring of Honor. So their success rides on Ring of Honor's success.
I mean, Kerry Silver was also all in with Ring of Honor as well.
Absolutely.
But the difference is, even, I mean, there's two scenarios. There's only one of possible two scenarios. Either he was breaking even constantly or he was losing money. And the fact is, if you're a businessman trying to make money with an endeavor such as professional wrestling, if you're losing money consistently, you're going to sell it pretty quickly, no matter how much you love it. At some point, you're going to say, you know what? I can't keep losing money on this. If you keep breaking even on something, you're going to keep it for quite a long while because you're going to start thinking, okay, I can eventually just stop breaking even and start making some money. But after a while, if the best you can do is break even, you're going to sell it as well. So it was one of those two things.
Right.
He clearly wasn't making money with it. And if he was, he wasn't making money on the regular.
And you know, I mean, this is a bit off topic, but you know what bothers me about the wrestling business, and this probably lends into ROH and TNA. You more than I, have dealt a lot with the backstage politics of wrestling. You know, talking about how, like, for instance, paydays for wrestlers, like what they get paid for what they do. And a lot of wrestlers are real cool. They're like, I just want the experience, or I just want the ring time, or whatever. And then there are some wrestlers that demand X amount. My problem on the independent level, and by the way, I consider TNA, I consider that independent wrestling when ROH is better production than you are. But the problem that I have with independent wrestling is like it shouldn't just be the job of the promoter as much as it is the job of the talent to get asses in the seats. So when you look at the TNA and Spike TV situation, Spike TV should have been helping a whole lot more. Dixie Carter should have realized that her presence on camera or as a vocal point was a bad idea. And a lot, you know, honestly, I don't really care one way or the other if Dixie Carter is involved. I'm just not interested. You know, I wasn't interested in Vicky Guerrero either, but you know what? She was a heat magnet, and that works to a point. But
I mean, I'm not going to pay money to buy a Vicky Guerrero special. A Vicky Guerrero special is not going to make me buy WWE Network, but she was a hell of a lot more entertaining than Dixie Carter ever will be. I mean, Vicky Guerrero is probably more entertaining drinking a cup of coffee than Dixie Carter is doing anything.
Right, exactly. And not to mention, What I was getting at with the whole TNA thing is like they're based primarily out of Florida.
Their big office, if you will, is in Nashville.
Right, exactly. And the problem is they got these wrestling stars. Like, they made a good move doing the shows in New York, but they can't do that all the time. Because at the end of the day, WWE is East Coast. When you really look at the brass tacks, WWE represents what East Coast big-time wrestling is. And when you go down south to Florida and you're putting these New York wrestlers on in the wrong territory, you're not going to get the reaction that you expect. That's like when you bring a Jeff Hardy, when you bring a Kurt Angle, I mean, great talents unto themselves, but when you bring them to say, you know, let's say hypothetically they're great talents, but they weren't superstars from television. You bring them to Tennessee, the style they work might not get over. You know, that's something that I think that the people that are in charge of TNA don't really get. The fact that when they went to New York, they got Tommy Dreamer involved, and, you know, they got Bully Ray involved more. They brought back D-Von. They put together the Hardys. They put the Wolves against the Hardys. You know, all that stuff. They did all the right things because they were in New York, because that was the territory that these people were bred in and where they grew up and made a name for themselves. I don't, like, if you drop the same talent into Zbrojovnik, Yugoslavia, I don't know if they're really going to draw, you know, just because of who they are. Who cares if they were worldwide talents or not? But what they did in New York was right, because not only did Tommy Dreamer draw or sell tickets or whatever for the New York audience and the New Jersey audience and the Philadelphia audience, but Tommy Dreamer, more likely than not, did an awful lot of promotion for the company just for the fact that they wanted to make sure the shows were successful. You don't see a lot of that anymore.
This is true, but I think that's actually indicative of what's wrong with TNA, because that's not, I mean, but having Tommy Dreamer and having people in New York market, yes, that's going to get people to buy tickets and pack the building. But when your primary responsibility is television ratings, not the same, because your television airs all over the world.
Exactly.
All over the country on Thursday nights at 9 o'clock. So, I mean, there are a lot of people that, you know, are kind of done with ECW. I mean, you don't hear the ECW chants anymore.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's done.
Right.
And when I watch, when I flip the station, I see Tommy Dreamer doing his thing. I'm like, great. More people try to capitalize on ECW's nostalgia. I'm not into that anymore. It's not my deal.
Right.
I loved ECW back in the day. Loved it. Went to all the shows in the Massachusetts area, but, you know, that day is dead.
And the thing, like I was saying, promotion isn't just for the promoter. It's for the talent, too. And you want to know, and you'll agree with me on this, I think Ring of Honor has got the right idea. And here's why. This is the main selling point to me for Ring of Honor. And by the way, there was argument that possibly Ring of Honor might be an option for these TNA talents. I doubt it. I doubt it very highly. TNA could, I think Ring of Honor is doing just fine all by itself.
I mean, I think they will pick up some TNA talent, but go with your point and then I'll counteract.
My point is simply this. TNA has been with a television station that hasn't cared about promoting them for 6 years, 6-7 years, however long. They can try as they might to promote, but their house show business does terrible numbers. Their TV business does terrible numbers. I mean, they get 1 million people to watch. You know what? 1 million? That's a big number regardless of if WWE does 3. But, I mean, that's 1/3 of the audience, but still, that's 1 million people. If I could get 1 million people to watch PZW, I think I'd be happy. But the talents, they may do radio shows and, like, yeah, we'll do radio, but we won't go door to door and we won't paper the town and we won't poster and all that stuff. Dude, ROH had one of the biggest opportunities they possibly could have had on actual pay-per-view just recently, and those talented people did everything they possibly could. They spoke with everybody. You spoke with Roderick Strong on one of these podcasts, which, by the way, probably reaches, I mean, it's on Gerwek.net, but if I know podcasts the way I know podcasts, there's probably a very select group of people that listen to this show and or listen to podcasts in general from Gerwek.net, and it's not a big number, but you know what? It's not as big as you'd like anyway. But you know what? Roderick Strong still said, yeah, let's do this interview. And regardless of what somebody like Shane Daly might say about Roddy Strong, I think he's got a great mind for the business and the promotion, and I think all of the other talents were doing the same thing in other markets as well. And honestly, I haven't seen the numbers. I don't know if they're even out yet, but I really, really hope with all the hard work they put in, it was a success. TNA, not so much.
And to go back to your point, Tyler, you said, is this Spike TV's fault? I mean, I'm not blaming Vince Russo. I think Vince Russo was the final nail in the coffin, if you will. But I think Spike TV had plans on not renewing Impact for a long, long time. And I don't blame TNA, Spike TV, for, quote, killing TNA or dampening TNA or whatever. I don't use the word blame at all. In fact, to a large degree, I commend them on not renewing TNA Impact, because here's the deal, and I know Steve Gerwig and Frank D, they thought it was a sad day for wrestling, and for many people it is. And the only thing sad about TNA Impact possibly going out of business as a result of Spike TV not renewing their contract is that a lot of talented wrestlers are possibly going to be out of work.
Right.
You never want that to happen. I hope every single one of those wrestlers land on their feet, whether it's a cushy gig on the independent, somewhere in Japan, somewhere in Mexico, WWE, Ring of Honor, as you mentioned. I hope all of those guys land on their feet. That is the only bad thing about TNA possibly ending as a promotion. Because, see, the fact of the matter is, when you and I and everybody else listening to the Body Slam podcast, watch other television shows. We watch them because we like them. You watch Dexter because you like them. You like it. I watch, you know, True Blood, Arrow, you know, what have you, because I like those shows, and they have a large audience. If they weren't good shows, I wouldn't watch them.
Right.
And if I heard eventually that, hey, this show is being canceled because nobody watches it, I'm not going to think twice because I didn't watch the show. I didn't think it was that good. So why do I care if it was canceled? Same thing with TNA. I have a very hard time watching TNA Impact. I mean, the show boggles, the stupidity of the story progression boggles my mind. I mean, even the talented athletes they have in the ring can't make the most of what they have to work with because they're given very little to work with. And the show is bad more than it is good. I mean, I will say that, even though I hate the six-sided ring, I did like Bobby Lashley versus Jeff Hardy. I thought it was a great match.
Oh, yeah. I tuned in for the high spot, but
I mean, I really liked that match from top to bottom. I mean, I think Bobby Lashley is a good world heavyweight champion for TNA. But I'm not sad because the thing is, you mentioned again, TNA has a million viewers. However, they've had the same 1 million viewers since they began airing their show on Spike TV, and it hasn't grown once.
Nope.
They lose viewers more than they gain viewers, and if you're a business trying to make money with a with an IP, you want that to grow. And if it doesn't grow, no matter what the numbers, if it doesn't grow within a certain amount of time, and you invested a lot of money into the company, it still hasn't grown, you got to cut your losses.
Right.
Because there are other programs on the horizon. You know, so I am not sad at all that TNA is going to be out of business, possibly. I'm always sad about the wrestlers losing jobs, but that's it. And the thing is, anybody being sad, think about this. Dixie Carter and her family, they're rich.
They're fine.
I mean, the day TNA goes out of business, Dixie Carter still wakes up in her mansion, still wakes up with a loaded bank account, and doesn't have to worry about where the next paycheck is coming from, doesn't have to worry about how she's paying the bills. The wrestlers do. And I think that lends to why TNA didn't do as well, because TNA is basically her plaything.
Right.
And the way she spins things in the media, when she actually talks to the media, is hilarious, because you got to remember, her background is in public relations.
Right.
So they're used to spinning things in their favor all the time. Case in point, telling everybody, oh, we walked away from Spike TV. No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Liar, liar, pants on fire.
Pants on fire. There's no way you walked away from TNA. And plus, also, why would you hire Vince Russo, who hasn't given any one good idea, and lie about it? I mean, if she truly valued Spike TV as a television partner, and they told you, we don't want Vince Russo writing the show. Why would you
allow him to
continue
write
to use him? I mean, what? Unless Vince Russo knows where the body is, why is he still writing your TV? I mean, plus, I can understand lying about having a staff member if they're producing for your company in a very positive way. Vince Russo was not producing for TNA in a positive way.
No, not at all.
At all. So, I mean, I don't watch TNA that often at all. I read the results on GoWork.net. I follow along. When I hear about something good, I catch it on YouTube. I catch it on demand or whatnot. And once in a while, you know, I will watch the show. But when I watch the show, I'm always thinking to myself, God, this is horrible. The show's horrible more than it's good. And why do I want content on television like that? I mean, to case the point home, I love professional wrestling. I mean, it's my jam. I breathe professional wrestling. I loved WCW. Even in the dying days, I loved WCW. I thought it was entertaining. And of course, there were some Russo things that kind of stunk, but I dug WCW even in its last days. Mm. I loved ECW. WWE's hit or miss these days, but I love WWE. Even some of the small promotion, I mean, the AWF, the American Wrestling Federation, that was on WB 56 at 2 in the morning, they had rounds.
Right.
The main event, the big program was Tito Santana versus Cowboy Bob Orton, and the matches went like they had three rounds of judges' decisions. I dug that.
Hmm.
I mean, I mean, even the smaller independent shows that are on television, I dug that. You know, all the Mexican wrestling that was on the Spanish channel, I enjoyed that very much. TNA is even the MTV stuff with Vampiro tombstoning Sean Waltman into an exploding casket.
Oh, Wrestling Society.
Yes, I got a kick out of that even. Yeah. TNA, for me, is the very first wrestling promotion that, in my mind, doesn't count. Like, when they announced Sting as an 8-time world heavyweight champion recently, WWE did it, but some blog I read announced him as an 8-time world champion, and I thought to myself, no, he's a 6-time world champion. When did he win 8? And then when did he win the other two? And they were counting TNA, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Wait a minute, WWE counted TNA?
No, they didn't. Oh. A blog I was reading counted Sting as a 8-time world champion. I was like, wait a minute, he's a 6-time world champion. I said, oh, they're counting his two in TNA. And I'm thinking to myself, this stinks. Like, I don't consider TNA part of wrestling canon, if you will. That's how disillusioned I've been
with
TNA
for
a long time. And I think a lot of people dig that as well. I mean, WWE, excuse me, everybody, WWE, for the longest time, they never acknowledged the existence of ECW or WCW. But eventually they did. And then when they finally bought both companies, they announced not only the existence, but they not only acknowledged the existence, but they also acknowledged their accomplishments.
Right.
Because a big chunk of the wrestling audience also watched ECW, a larger chunk watched WCW. Not the case with TNA. Not at all. Sorry for coughing, everybody. And I think all the rumors that Vince is going to buy TNA, no way. There's no value there. There's no value. I mean, people said, oh, if he buys TNA, it's another hook for the network. TNA can barely get anybody to watch their shows. WWE is having a hard time getting people to watch WWE Network for all the content they have with WWE, WCW, ECW, AWA, everything else in between. You think TNA is going to be a big deal as far as, oh, well, TNA is on WWE Network now, let's watch it? No, not at all.
Right, exactly.
And TNA, and also, the real reason I don't think, I'm not sad that TNA may be going away is because TNA has never learned from their mistakes. They keep doing the same thing over and over again based on this misguided ego that they know what they're doing and nobody else does. And the fact that, hey, if they haven't learned by now, they never will.
Mm.
And I think their existence in the wrestling business is detrimental to the business as a whole, and I hope they go out of business. I mean, this may not be the popular decision because there's one less place to go, but as a consumer, as a fan, as a pundit who wants good professional wrestling, TNA is not the answer.
No, and they need to let it go, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, they're not going to get on another network because, when you got to think about this. First of all the fall lineups have been announced. So even if they do get on another network, they're not going to be on another network this fall. So you're thinking, so you're talking at least early 2015.
Right.
Number one. So that's November, December, and January that they're not going to be on TV. They can't count on house show business because they barely get anybody to go to house shows as it is. Their on-demand platform is non-existent, so that's not going to work.
Right.
And plus, when other companies go to TNA and say, hey, you know, we're interested, because there'll be companies interested with this promotion, but they're not going to give TNA the amount of money that Spike TV did.
No.
And if there was any channel that should have made TNA a priority, it definitely was Spike TV, but they didn't.
Nope.
They definitely didn't. And the thing is, the company, whoever station, whatever channel network does maybe, I don't know, get TNA on their channel.
The Ocho, ESPN
they're
8.
They're not going to give them nearly as much money. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is they need a certain amount of money from a television network to survive and to have an operating cost. And if anything lower than what Spike TV was paying, they're going to have to make more cuts. They're going to have to start doing less shows. They're going to have to cut more talent. There's going to be a lot of things they have to cut from their production, from their roster, and everything else in between.
Right.
Hold on one second. Sorry for everybody for coughing. Allergies, summertime, it happens. You know, I do apologize for the coughing. Everybody's here. But back to what I'm saying. Plus, when other networks look into having TNA as a possible, thing on their network, they're going to look and say, okay, WWE didn't get much money from NBC, so wrestling is considered relatively cheap programming. Plus, they're going to want to look at the network books, not the company books or the network books. They're going to know, because insiders talk, and other networks are going to know that, okay, Spike TV put X amount of dollars into that company, and they still didn't draw a dime, still didn't make a dent. And the other reason why Spike TV is letting Impact Wrestling go is because they're having a hard time selling advertising. Which is one of the things. I mean, for cops, people are lining up to buy advertising for cops. People are lining up to buy advertising for Bellator. People don't line up that much to buy advertising for WWE. Never mind TNA.
Like they just started doing alcoholic beverages.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's one of the things when a network is looking for programming, they want to say, will advertisers spend money to advertise during this show? And Spike TV can barely get anybody to pay for advertising. So other networks aren't going to have much success. So if they can't make money off of it, history shows television networks, which is Fox and Spike TV, they've put money into the company and they didn't make any money back. And they're going to know the history, so they're in a battle. I mean, they may get syndication somewhere. They may have to go back as an independent, you know, or be kind of like a regular independent. But they're going
to
lose more time.
Continue being an independent.
Continue basically being independent because they're going to have a lot of people out of work. And again, that's the sad part. TNA going out of business is not the sad thing here. People losing jobs is the sad thing. And I think some will land on their feet, some won't. I don't think WWE is going to be the place for a lot of these guys because they just signed a bunch of guys. They signed Kessler, they signed Kevin Steen, they signed Prince Devitt.
You know, real talents that can be molded as opposed to the ones that have been destroyed as a brand in general.
And plus, I mean, Bobby Roode, he made inquiries about going to WWE. They weren't interested. Kurt Angle tried going back. They weren't interested. Jeff Hardy, if he agrees to go to rehab, he probably would be invited back. And then Lashley, with his history with the company, he'd go to WWE. MVP, they may bring him back depending on, you know, what the logistics are. I mean, but they have a lot of guys at NXT that are getting over on the NXT show. They have a lot of guys in the Performance Center that haven't even, you know, they will be know of yet that are probably going to be good in the future. And they just signed, you know, three really good talents. And those three talents, you know, in Kenta, Devitt, and Steen, in my opinion, they're more entertaining than anything TNA has on their roster right now.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, unfortunately, lost some areas. I mean, they would have, they kicked him off of Tough Enough before the show even began. So he's not going to the E.
Wait a minute.
Or as Frank D likes to say, the whip. Which I like, by the way, Frank D. I like that a lot.
Wait a minute. Austin Aries was on Tough Enough?
You know the Tough Enough was Steve, that Steve Austin hosted?
Yeah.
Well, apparently it had a bunch of other guys in the cast, and Austin Aries was one of them. And then Vince looked at the cast and was like, no, not at all. I'm not digging this cast. Recast this show now. And Austin Aries is one of the guys on the show.
Oh, wow.
And actually, that's one of the reasons why he was contemplating
retiring,
because he realized, okay, if they won't even they think I'm good enough or tough enough, how am I going to get a contract? And then he was contemplating retirement, announced retirement, and then TNA was like, hey, we'll take you. You know? And the thing is, that's common knowledge out there. People know that. Wrestling promoters know that, so a lot of them are going to lowball him.
Yeah.
If TNA goes out of business, he's one of the people cut. But again, my view on TNA possibly going out of business, it's a good thing, because as a consumer who wants to watch quality programming, they're not quality programming. And you don't. And why am I going to waste my time watching or even caring about a show that's not quality, hasn't been quality in a long time?
Right.
I mean, gets them off the air so that way you can put something in its place that will be quality, even if it's not wrestling, even if it's something I don't like but a different audience does. Guess what? At least it's a quality show.
And think about it. The whole thing with Vince Russo being the quote-unquote nail in the coffin, Vince Russo didn't kill WCW. Vince Russo didn't kill TNA. What he can be accused of taken to judge for would be trying to recreate the Attitude Era in a promotion where it just don't belong. And that's it. It worked in one place, one time. Lightning struck one time. He tried to ride that lightning bolt long after it had fizzled out. And unfortunately for TNA and WCW and any other venture that he even ran a promotion at one point, very religious promotion that didn't last more than two shows.
And you probably have those two shows on DVD.
Yes, I do.
Oh.
And they're terrible. Come on. They're Rodman versus Mr. Perfect in Australia bad. And I have that one too. I got it at Walmart for a dollar.
I've seen that match. It is, as Jim Ross says, bowling shoe ugly. But enough about Impact Wrestling. You've given your opinion. I've given my opinion. I'm sure I'll get some hate mail for on Twitter. But let's talk about the big debates. The main event of the evening, folks. Todd and I have different opinions on a particular subject known as the Attitude Era. I think the Attitude Era is great. Todd doesn't think so. And I got quite a few messages from people when I announced this, by the way. Head over to Twitter, go to the Body Slam Podcast. That's the handle. Friend us on Twitter, bodyslampodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up. I'm at Midnight Logic Go on Twitter. Hit me up. Todd, what's your Twitter handle?
I believe right now I'm only operating on the PZ Wrestling Twitter handle. That's at PZ Wrestling. And, of course, www.pzwrestling.com for all the latest news about Project Zero Wrestling. And not to mention, you and I have a show coming up as well.
This is true.
Yep, September 27th.
September 27th, Elk Mania 2 at the Beverly Salem Elks Lodge at 39 Bow Street, Beverly, Massachusetts. We will be talking about that show. And actually, next week, I'm going to announce the main events for Elk Mania 2 on the Body Slam Podcast. But let's get to the nitty gritty.
We got Patterson.
So, Todd, I'm going to have you go first. You are not a fan of the Attitude Era, and tell us why.
Well, this podcast is going long. Let's just say I like it, and good night. No. all right. Well, a lot of people, I guess, may not like this opinion, but I don't know why, because it's mine. You can't have it. So one Mark's opinion here is that I think that the Attitude Era, where it was influential, it certainly made backyard wrestling easier, because everybody liked wrestling and wanted to be recruited to roll around in a backyard or a park somewhere.
Me included.
I was there before the big splurge, but it certainly helped our numbers. As influential as the Attitude Era may have been, honestly, I look back at the wrestling as rotten, and the reason being is I wouldn't necessarily say I'm a pure wrestling fan, because I don't even know what that means. Naked Greeks, maybe, but that might not be the best way to put it. But here's the thing. I honestly liked the cartoony nonsense of the 1990s, the 1980s. I liked the new generation, your Bret Harts, your Shawn Michaels. And I liked Steve Austin, pre-broken neck. And you know what? It's not his fault that he changed his style either. But when your main events are Undertaker, Steve Austin, Kane, The Rock, and a lot of people might disagree with me on this, but kick-punch main events are not interesting to me at all. After Steve broke his neck, he stopped being as athletic and resorted to the barroom brawler style wrestler, and
which he had to.
Of course, he had to, and you know what? He got over, and he made more money than Hogan doing it. But the thing is wrestling as a whole was big. Steve Austin was the biggest proponent of it, and of course, you had the Undertaker and The Rock and Shawn. Maybe not Shawn for most of the time, but you had these people for a long period of time. Now, let's define quickly, what is the Attitude Era? I'm thinking 98 to 2001.
I would say so, because the thing is, a lot of people say the whole DX deal in 97, right before the Montreal Screwjob, was the Attitude Era, but I call that the beta test.
Right.
For the Attitude Era. That was kind of Vince testing it out to see if a Jerry Springer-type programming would work. In my opinion, the official Attitude Era launched on April 13th, 1998, Monday Night Raw, Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon in the main event. Vince has Dude Love come at the very last minute, beats up a handcuffed Steve Austin, which draws a lot of heat. And I'll tell you why, because as a lifelong wrestling fan, going through high school, going through middle school, grade school, what have you, it was not cool to like wrestling. A lot of my friends were closet wrestling fans, where if we were at recess talking about wrestling, they would lower their voice when the popular kids came around, because they would never want to get caught talking about wrestling. I even knew popular kids who liked wrestling, but if anybody asked them, they would swear on the Bible that they hate wrestling. It's fake, it's phony, you know, the usual quips.
Yeah.
I was always the anti closet wrestling fan. I was always that guy that waved the pro wrestling flag high and proud and got ridiculed for it, but I didn't care. I loved wrestling that much. I admitted it. I was like, yeah, that's right. Y'all are watching the Super Bowl. I'm watching Raw. What's up?
Yeah.
You know, like, screw the Super Bowl. I'm watching the Royal Rumble.
Right.
You know, that's my Super Bowl. You know, I mean, I was always wore the wrestling shirts, got the figures, watched the pay-per-views. It was funny where, like, this always happened quite a bit. People knew, even friends that I weren't like friends with in school. Excuse me. I'd watch a pay per view, and then usually a half hour before the pay per view began, I'd either get a phone call, or somebody would knock at my door, and it would be like the parents of a kid that I really didn't talk to in school, and they would knock on the door. My mom or dad would be like, hey, who are you? What's going on? And they would say, oh, Atlee, we hear Atlee's watching the pay-per-view. And then they would maybe just not even just claim I invited them. And the way I looked at it, hey, I don't care. The more the merrier. So I bumped to a lot of closet wrestling fans, and they were even honest with me about it. It wasn't cool to be a wrestling fan in my day until that April 13th Raw in 1998, because I remember when I was watching that in my room, and they announced Vince McMahon versus Steve Austin, right before they came back for a commercial, my dad came in the room and said, and my mom as well, and they both came in the room and said, hey, we're watching this with you. And I was like, what? Because the idea of Vince McMahon being in the ring was just too good to pass up. And they were like, wow, this Hellraiser, Steve Austin guy is going to beat his ass. That was what they wanted to see. And then, of course, Vince McMahon does the whole, you said you could beat me with one hand tied behind your back. So Steve Austin gets handcuffed. And then as the match is about to begin, Dude Love comes out, beats up Austin, handcuffs Steve Austin, which leads to the pay-per-view. So, and then, of course, the next day I go to school, that's all everybody's talking about. It was the first time people were ever openly talking about professional wrestling was that day. Like, for me. I mean, people talked about Tyson and Austin, you know, the whole thing on WrestleMania 14, but that was the first day I can remember people in droves running up to me, the wrestling fan. Hey, did you see wrestling? Did you see Austin and McMahon? Dude Love came in. This Dude Love hippie guy came in. Man, I hope Steve... Because people wanted to see what was going to happen next.
Right.
And then I remember, you know, people would talk about it during the... like, throughout the rest of the school year, April, May, June, school's over, the whole summer happens. And September, I remember the first day of school, everybody just come up to me saying, wow, I can't wait for Breakdown, because the main event was Austin versus Kane and Triple H in a handicap match for the WWE title. And also the co-main event was Mankind, Ken Shamrock, and The Rock in a triple threat steel cage match. And it was cool to be a wrestling fan. I wasn't the only one wearing a wrestling shirt. Everybody was wearing wrestling shirts. I mean, everybody was going to events. I mean, Tuesday was the funnest day for wrestling fans if you were in school, because that was my senior year of high school, because the next day, Tuesday, everybody, all you were talking about in study hall was what happened on Raw, what happened on Nitro.
Right.
And that's an error. I mean, and that's an error that we don't have anymore. And I think that alone speaks volumes as to how important the Attitude Era was. Now, I agree with you, Todd, that you really can't think of many five-star matches.
Nope.
during that period. Like, there are some matches I think that were good. Like, I think Triple H versus The Rock at Fully Loaded 98, at Triple H versus The Rock at SummerSlam 98 was good. But the five-star matches are few and far between during the Attitude Era. But even though that's the case, I see the overall energy, the overall presentation of the show, and the fact that it was more engaging from a storyline perspective, I think that makes up for the lack of five-star matches. And let me run this by you, Todd, see if you agree with this. Steve Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin, said on his podcast a couple of years ago that the reason he resorted to kick-punch main events, not only because he had to, but because he figured, okay, by the time his match began, everybody had already seen everything else, all the fancy moves, all the high spots, all the chairs and whatnot from every other match in the card, so why don't you make it a fist fight?
Right.
So, and he said, and it paid off, even though they weren't five-star matches. You know, but still, it paid off to a large degree. Now, do you agree with that philosophy?
I agree that it worked. It must have. But I remember many a time during the Attitude Era where I'd go over to a friend's house for a pay-per-view, and when they're like, all right, the next match is the main event, I'm like, all right, see you guys. I'm all done. I don't care. You know, I just didn't care. The biggest one, I mean, besides the fact that I thought the wrestling wasn't, you know, like, Austin can say all day long, oh yeah, by the time my match started, they have seen everything else. Yeah, but here's the thing, the undercards during Steve Austin's biggest era were awful. Okay, was it the Intercontinental title match? What was the Intercontinental title match at WrestleMania 15?
It was a four-way. It was Road Dogg, Jesse James, Ken Shamrock, and Goldust. And I can't remember the other person that was in that match, but it was a four-way for the IC
and
title.
And Billy Gunn.
Billy Gunn actually defended the Hardcore title in a triple threat match.
Who was in that?
Al Snow and Bob Holly.
Oh, yeah. Two matches that are going to put asses in seats for miles.
Oh, Val Venus was the fourth person in that match. So it was Ken Shamrock, Val Venus, Road Dogg, and Goldust in a four-way for the Intercontinental Championship.
Unbelievable. And all right, look, I don't know. I know there must have been an angle going on at the time, but I look at WrestleMania 15 as the epitome of awful. It's the one WrestleMania that I just can't sit through. And I liked WrestleMania 9, okay? Just to give you an idea, like, I would rank 9 second to 15.
I would give you that one just because of the fact that I remember people were still, you know, hot and heavy as wrestling fans during the Attitude Era, because WrestleMania 15 took place in March. That's almost 1 year since my official start of the Attitude Era, April of 98. And I actually remember when WrestleMania 15 was right around the corner, everybody was stoked. People could not wait for WrestleMania 15. It was our Super Bowl.
And that's all
everybody talked about going into that week of school, is what's going to happen, who's going to win, Rock or Austin. And I remember when it was over and coming to school, it was really the first time I ever heard people complain about a wrestling show. I mean, besides Michael Cole spoiling the finish before the main event, it wasn't that good of a show.
Mm.
I mean, it had a lot of action. It was high energy, the show, not the tag team, but a lot of high energy. But still, it was just, it wasn't that good. I mean,
it was a one-match card.
Yeah. I mean, yes, Triple H turned heel, but nobody wanted that. People still wanted DX.
Right, and all right, let's put it out right now. Undertaker, the phenom of WrestleMania, takes on his biggest challenge at the time, Big Boss Man. What?
But I will say that was before the streak was the streak.
Right, exactly. But I mean, but also you look at it like this. There was a time in, what, 2000, where The Big Show was the main event, and he was terrible. And once again, what's the most memorable thing about Big Show from back then when he was wrestling the Big Boss Man? Like, for some reason, Ray Traylor got over big time with nobody and still got the main event.
I mean, I will admit, the Attitude Era definitely had its faults, and the Big Show, in my opinion, was the first WWE champion that wasn't pushed as the WWE champion. I mean, whatever Triple H and The Rock were doing still took precedent over whatever Big Show was doing as WWE champion.
Right.
It just didn't get over. I mean, we could talk all day about how WWE botched Big Show's career from the beginning.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of hits and misses with the Attitude Era, but once it ended, the audience went away with it. And the thing is, a lot of people say that WWE today needs to get edgier, needs to bring back the Attitude Era in order to, you know, be relevant again, or be popular, or be extremely popular as it once was, but I don't think that's the answer. And the reason I don't think that's the answer is because I don't think the current WWE roster can produce the Attitude Era like moments, because you got to remember, during the Attitude Era, you had Triple H in his prime, you had The Rock in his prime, Steve Austin, The Undertaker, Mick Foley. You had a whole cast of characters. You had you didn't have TV writers. You had wrestling booking, and yeah, you did have Vince Russo operating through a Vince McMahon filter. Plus, you had Jim Ross as the vice president of talent relations, bringing people in, calling the stories. I mean, WWE was running on all cylinders. They had the talent. They had a smorgasbord of talent, and they had a great axe. WWE doesn't have that right now. So I think if Vince McMahon tomorrow said, hey, Attitude Era right now, we're doing the Attitude Era, it would look like a carpet. It would look like a cheap imitation.
Right. And terrible.
Oh, exactly.
You know, they're already – see, the thing is they're already starting to lean towards more – I don't want to say edginess – but I think you can do a PG show and make it entertaining. CM Punk in 2011, he wasn't saying anything crude. He wasn't telling people to suck it. He wasn't you know, he wasn't bleeding every 5 minutes, but what he was doing, he was being captivating because he was being honest with the audience, and that is what the Attitude Era was based on. The Attitude Era, people remember the Attitude Era, and they're like, I love the Attitude Era for the action. Bull! There was... It was not good. When I think action, I think wrestling, and there was nothing good about the wrestling. Like you said, no five-star matches.
This is where I'm going to disagree with you to a degree, actually to a large degree, because one of the shows that was awesome during the Attitude Era was King of the Ring 1998, which is infamously known for the Undertaker-Mick Foley Hell in a Cell match.
Right.
But there was a lot of hype going into this pay-per-view. The King of the Ring tournament had a lot of hype because Ken Shamrock was squared off against Jeff Jarrett and he had The Rock against Dan Severn, and everybody assumed that WWE was going to cash in on the UFC's popularity to a Shamrock-Severn finale. Plus, you had X-Pac and Owen Hart going at it, and that was the anticipated match. You had Al Snow making his in-ring debut to see if he can get a job with the company. Actually, going into that show, you also had the first blood match, Kane versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. You're kind of wondering, how the hell is Steve Austin going to beat Kane? Because Kane is covered with that red suit from head to toe, so how is he going to show bleeding? Where Steve Austin just wears black boots and black trunks. Right. So you're wondering, how is Steve Austin going to make this guy bleed? It just racked your brain. So there was a lot of good stuff going into the show. And actually, Mankind versus The Undertaker was the least anticipated match going into that show because the match had been done to death. You've seen it a million times, so you thought to yourself, what else could they do?
Right.
Now, I have the card of King of the Ring 1998. Opening matches, Taka Michinoku and the Headbangers against Kai and Tai, Funaki, Mens Teo, and Dick Togo. And that was a fun little opener. It only lasted 6 minutes, but it was a fun opener. You know, because everybody, like, the Headbangers were kind of getting over, and Taka Michinoku had his fans. And so it got over. And then you had the first King of the Ring semifinal match, Jeff Jarrett versus Ken Shamrock. Match is 5 minutes. Ken Shamrock beats Jeff Jarrett. You know, boom. One half of the puzzle solved. Then you had The Rock versus Dan Severn. Everybody thinks it's Dan Severn. But to everybody's surprise, The Rock wins.
Right.
And now at this time, The Rock was probably the second best heel under Vince McMahon at the time. And you knew The Rock was destined for greatness. And he was still the Intercontinental Champion. I remember everybody thought he was probably going to beat. A lot of people thought he's probably a year away from the world title. And he's probably going to beat the Honky Tonk Man's record for longest Intercontinental title reign. Then he had Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor go over on Al Snow and Head in a tag team match where they put a bottle of Head and Shoulders under the head. Now, me being a wrestling fan, thinking about it now, I was like, oh, that's kind of nauseating in a way. But I thought it was funny because I was a big Al Snow and Head fan. A lot of people were. And the fact that they pinned Head, it's like, what the hell? They pinned Head? But Al Snow got a job anyway. So, and then you had X-Pac and Owen Hart, which was 8 minutes, but it was 8 minutes of nonstop action. And Jim Ross put it over excellent because he even said, okay, you know what? Playtime's over. Enough of the shenanigans. Now business is picking up.
Right.
You know, and then you had the, you know, the New Age Outlaws against, you know, Billy Gunn and, you know, Bart Gunn and Bob Holly, you know, nothing match. Then you had Shamrock and The Rock in the finals, the King of the Ring tournament, and Shamrock wins. It was a great back-and-forth match.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you really wanted to see The Rock kind of get beat up by Shamrock, because when they had their feud in the first half of 1998, every single time Shamrock was about to win, The Rock somehow snuck a victory out of nowhere. So people were craving to see Rocky Maivia get his comeuppance from Ken Shamrock, and he finally did in the King of the Ring tournament.
Right.
Then you had Undertaker versus Mankind, and I remember my bedroom was packed full of wrestling fans. We're kind of thinking, like, maybe this is the bathroom break match, because we assumed at the time we had seen everything they have to offer. Boom. Foley goes flying off the cage. Our interest has peaked. And then Kane versus Steve Austin. Kane went over, won the title. Of course, he dropped the next night. But they just threw everything. That was a gimmick. They threw every gimmick out there. They lowered the cell. Taker came out, hit Austin with the chair. Referee was knocked down. Sable's being forced to watch it by Vince McMahon. I mean, they had all the elements perfect. And even though it wasn't a five-star match per se, it had a lot of, from a storyline perspective, it was engaging because you thought, wow, you didn't think Undertaker was going to help his brother Kane after everything they've been through together. You're wondering what Sable going to do because he's being forced to watch this by Vince.
Right.
So that, I mean, even though there was no five-star wrestling match on this show, it was action-packed from top to bottom, and it had engaging storylines. Like, even if there were no five-star matches, there was five-star storytelling.
Right. But here's the thing. King of the Ring 98 was a great show, and there were a handful, if not a lot, of really great shows. But like I was saying, the honesty factor is what is most important. Why did Rock get over? Because he cut that promo, that Die Rocky Die promo. Why did Steve Austin get over? Because he was an everyman. He was doing what every person wanted to do and mouthing off to his boss. There was a point where it was just like, okay, yeah, how long before you just fire him? I know that the argument can be made. It's like, well, he was their top seller. He was their gatekeeper. He made all the money. Yeah.
Also, the other aspect of that was Vince McMahon was determined that he is going to make Steve Austin conform to his way. That was always... Mm-hmm. The thing.
Right.
And then, of course, he realized he couldn't do that.
Right. And that was the day the Attitude Era ended, after WrestleMania 17. Is that right?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah. I mean, some people say the Invasion was a part of the Attitude Era, but I disagree.
No.
Because I think that when Steve Austin turned heel at WrestleMania 17, that knocked the wind out of a lot of people's sails.
Yeah, that was the end of it for a very long time.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Honesty is what's important. Vince McMahon actually came out himself and said, "We're going to stop insulting your intelligence." And they let people be honest. And you know what? And they mix. And the thing is, when you have a hand, it's one thing if somebody like a CM Punk comes out and does an angle where it's like he sounds like he's telling the truth, or a Daniel Bryan who comes out and says, you know, there's a Japanese culture that says that wrestlers slap each other to get them in, but I'm not going to slap you, John Cena, because you're not a wrestler. You know, and there's a little bit of truth, or at least it sounds like a little bit of truth, but the problem that they do now is that there's only one person doing it at a time. If they just let – if they took their roster and they said, okay, with a filter, mind you, not with a Vince – you know, not Vince Russo ideas, but with a filter, mind you, get a handful of people that can be really convincing on the microphone and have them say some real stuff. Kevin Steen will be perfect for this role. If CM Punk ever came back, I think it might actually be too late for him to be perfect for this role, but I think the sheer interest of him returning and talking at all would be enough. But the thing is, Daniel Bryan, is the Yes Movement dead? Probably, yeah. And you want to know why? It has nothing to do with Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan chased for like 8 months, got his belt, got hurt, or before he got hurt, or before he admitted to getting hurt, his first big angle as champion was him and his girlfriend versus Kane. Okay? That's just... All right, now you're insulting everybody that stood up and said, we want Daniel Bryan. Why do we want Daniel Bryan? Because he's a great wrestler, he's a little guy, and he's incredibly talented, and we want the little underdog to get a break. What's the first thing they do when they give him the title? Put him in the most ridiculous, intelligence-insulting storyline that there could ever be. And the Attitude Era, to kick it off, you had Bret and Vince. You had Steve Austin. You had The Rock getting upset about the fact that he wasn't getting the respect he wanted. And as Jim Cornette would say, if A was the truth and B was the truth and C was the truth, and then they start bringing in the kayfabe on D, well, the first three things he said were true. Why should I assume he's lying now? And the perception was that you could believe someone like The Rock, even if all he did was come out and spout his la 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 la, all that stuff. And same with Steve Austin. Steve Austin, well, I'm going to whoop my ass and blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, he didn't need to say anything. You know, he would come out, and that allowed for characters like Al Snow to flourish. It allowed characters like Mankind to flourish. It allowed The Undertaker to continue his career in a world where those over-the-top characters were dead because they had enough people on the roster that the fans considered credible.
Well, when you go to The Undertaker for a second, even if you weren't a wrestling fan, you knew who The Undertaker was. Undertaker is one of those people that, to a certain degree, you know, crosses the genre, if you will.
Mm.
I mean, even if you ever watch wrestling, it's not like Hogan, where everybody knows who Hulk Hogan is, if you're a fan or not. But there are a fair amount of people who have at least heard of The Undertaker.
Right.
And I think that and they've heard the reputation. So when everybody starts watching WWE programming in 1998, for the Attitude Era, they're like, okay, damn, this is the guy we've heard about. And he lived up to the hype the way he was booked, and he's a very talented guy. And go back to CM Punk for a second. I've always said that CM Punk, you know, was born in the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
He was tailor-made for the Attitude Era, because when you watch CM Punk do his thing now and before he left, there was an edginess to him that, you know, it was almost as if he was too good for what he was too good for this era. He was in the wrong era, because I didn't only think he would not only flourish in the Attitude Era, but he would be a top guy. Like, I don't think if John Cena was in his prime during the Attitude Era, I don't think he'd be as big a star.
No.
At all. I don't think Randy Orton would be as big a star. I think CM Punk would be a main eventer going neck and neck with Steve Austin, with The Undertaker.
The Jersey Shore made Randy Orton a star.
What?
The Jersey Shore made guys like Randy Orton, that manscaping, that tan and prison tattoos, that that just general attitude. I mean, like, a lot of people, when they think Jersey Shore, they think Zack Ryder. No. You got to think about the Broseph guys, the bromance guys, and I don't mean the guys from TNA, mind you. I mean the guys who care way too much about the look. Mankind was my Attitude Era champion, regardless of what anybody said, because he didn't look like a champion. But when you look at Randy Orton, you look at him and you go, okay, at least an hour on a tanning bed. He's probably got a woman with little hands doing his eyebrows, and he's all makeup and glossy, and he looks manufactured like most people do now.
Oh, I agree with you. But I think another reason why the Attitude Era was great for wrestling is because it happened at the right time.
Right.
Because 97, 98, 99, 2000 there was a very counterculture vibe going on in the United States, where people were accepting different things. People were thinking outside the box. People were accepting of more things that were vulgar, more things that were in your face, that were more shocking, if you will. And professional wrestling changed, and they were like, wow, this isn't my grandfather's professional wrestling anymore. You know, like, people really spoke to it. Another key component of the Attitude Era that made it successful is Sable. Because you got to think about it, her Playboy issue was, like, the hottest-selling Playboy issue in, like, ever.
Oh, yeah, she can wear T-shirts real well. With the new,
exactly.
And the pneumatic snavises didn't hurt either.
But when you're speaking to a audience with a lot of horny teenage males, and they see Sable, it's like, wow. And they highlighted her. She wasn't just another pretty face. She wasn't just a diva, if you will, in public. She wasn't just another pretty face. She wasn't just a made-up diva that bumped around in the ring and pretended she was a wrestler, pretended she could fight. She came across as a strong, you know, sexy woman. And even though, like, not the average guy could obviously get with her, but she's with Brock Lesnar now, she appealed to people that thought, hey, you know what, maybe it's possible. Maybe the fantasy's not so far-fetched. I mean, she was a key attraction. I mean, she was the dominant female in WWE, and they pushed her as a strong female. But now today with WWE, it's all these, as you said about Randy Orton, tan in bed, fake eyelash, heavy makeup women, you know, wearing barely nothing, which I'm not complaining about, but none of them stand out. And plus, you have them all wrestle now. Instead of being an engaging storyline, you're having them all wrestle now, and majority of them can't wrestle, and even though wrestling is not real competition, when you see most diva matches, it looks like fake fighting.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
And they didn't do that. So even though she wrestled, even though she's a women's champion, they protected her very much. They positioned her. She wasn't just this female that trips and sprains her ankle every time. I mean, and needed a man to bail her out. She fought. She stood on her own two feet.
That's right. And she ruined Mark Marrow's career doing it.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Oh,
she powerbombed Mark Marrow. Next thing you know, Steve Austin's on the phone with Vince going, so who am I working with next week? Mark Marrow. Now, who am I working with next week? He just got powerbombed by a woman on TV. I ain't working with him.
Dude, when Sable powerbombed Mark Marrow at WrestleMania... The place blew up. Because that was like the evolution of Sable, because at that time, Sable was still just another pretty face, but a pretty face that people liked. But when she powerbombed Mark Mero and Luna Vachon, nobody saw that coming. They thought she was this dainty thing, that delicate flower that nobody wanted to see hurt. And once she powerbombed both of them at WrestleMania, everybody just started saying, okay, this is not a dainty little flower. This is a woman that will stand up on her own 2 feet and will beat you up if you get in her face. She was who she needed to be in the moment.
Right.
And WWE highlighted her as that, even though they did some things where they made her do some degrading things. When she got hers, it was tenfold.
Right.
I mean, you got to think about it. When all the WWE promotional stuff out there that they put out, when they put out like ties and calendars and posters, and they would hide the roster, I guarantee you, their top five acts, drawing, merchandise, and otherwise, ratings was Austin, Rock, DX, Taker, and Sable. And I'm not saying that particular order, but Sable was the top five. And plus, once in a while, they would always tease that her and Steve Austin going to hook up. And people loved that. I mean, that was always a speculation piece, that will Steve Austin and Sable hook up? I mean, they teased it once in a while. And when they would tease it, it was a faint tease. But it made you think, and it made you wonder.
Well, the other point that I wanted to make about the Attitude Era was simply this. I remember Steve Austin beating Shawn Michaels for the heavyweight title. And then after that, everything is a blur. Because the Attitude Era did one thing that the WWE and wrestling in general has really had a very, very hard time coming back from. They made championship belts completely meaningless. Anybody could be champion. Look, Sheamus is a 17-time, you know, like, there are people that, I think Kevin Nash said it. He said, all right, you've been wrestling for 2 years. You're already the world champion 8 times. All right, what's wrong with this picture? You know, and a lot of people will say, oh, the belt's just a prop to help you get over. Yeah, but the thing that makes it an effective prop is that if it means something, the Intercontinental title means nothing today. Or then. It means absolutely nothing. And there were wonderful grace periods where it was just like, this could mean something again, like CM Punk holding it for a year and change. And you had those moments. But now, I think, honestly, now I think the WWE title or the Unified title or whatever they call it, WWE World Heavyweight Championship, I think it's the best it's going to get. And if they can keep this momentum going, cool. But the Attitude Era did one thing. They oversaturated the promotion with championship belts. Everybody got a turn, whether it's like that one girl in the neighborhood, everybody gets a turn. And they really and they did exactly that. They defiled the idea of what it is to be a champion. Yes.
You know, if they did that today, which they do to a great degree, I agree with you, but I think it was called for in the Attitude Era, because think about it. Steve Austin as champion wasn't the draw. It was Steve Austin chasing the title. That was the allure. Everybody wanted to see Steve Austin get the belt back. That's why if you think back, Steve Austin really never held the belt that long.
Right.
Because it was always like, okay, he has the belts. Now we got to get it off of him with a credible opponent so he can start chasing it. Because it wasn't like, oh, did you see that Steve Austin title defense on Raw? The whole allure was, man, when's he going to get the belt back? He got screwed out of the belts again and again and again.
And then back then they had four guys that could feasibly be the world's champion at any time, and that's why it worked. But the thing is, it's for a historian or for someone who actually likes keeping track of the stuff. The one thing I hated about wrestling in those days, and it happened mostly in 2000, 2001. That's when I, honestly, for you people out there, that's kind of when I focused. I watched wrestling every week, Raw and Nitro. I liked the wrestling on WCW a whole lot more, but I appreciated.
And a lot of people would agree with
that. And I like the story. Like, the WWE had the story aspect right. Nitro had the wrestling right. And it's just too bad when the chance came for them to get together and do something, they just couldn't make it click. But I lost a lot of interest during the 2000 to about the year 2000, because that belt flip-flopped. If I missed a week, the title had changed hands twice. Yeah, like if it was pay-per-view week, I especially missed at least two title changes in the main event picture and 16 title changes elsewhere. Hardcore Champion was passed around. That was meant to be funny, but honestly, that was self-satire, if anything, because they even made the damn belt out of the old world title. And they just,
that Kurt Hennig destroyed on Saturday night's main event.
Exactly, and they just handed it around to everybody because that's exactly what they were doing. And now, granted,
I mean, there were several referees that held that belt.
Mike Chioda is a 3-times hardcore champ. Pat Patterson is a hardcore champion.
I was there for that pay-per-view when Patterson defended the belt against Briscoe in an evening gown match. King of the Ring 2000 in Boston.
I remember you told me when you were watching Legends House that you're like, it's a great show, but I can't look at Patterson the same way after doing the podcast with me.
This is true.
Which makes me giggle. But like I said, the Attitude Era, and I'm going to say, this is my final thoughts on it, because we've been doing this for like 2 hours.
We're closing on a 2-hour
mark.
Yeah,
this is the longest one we've ever done. And for anybody, see, that's the thing. If anybody actually stuck around to this point, let me just say, the Attitude Era as a whole molded what we watch today. And for those of you who complain a lot about now and say it was better in the old days, it's because of the old days that we have what we have now. But here's the thing. In the Attitude Era, you would see people bleed on a regular basis, even towards the, I guess you could call it the Ruthless Aggression Era, which I didn't know was a thing until the new video game came out. Even during the Ruthless Aggression Era, you'd see a lot of blood, but when they scaled back on it and completely stopped doing it, which, by the way, for the sake of guys like Nigel McGuinness, was a smart idea, when you see blood these days, it's almost like, ooh, oh my God, that's got... It becomes real again. What is old can be new again, as long as you don't keep going to the well and just ruining it. You know, like when Triple H would cut himself every Monday night during whatever match he was having, it was just like he bleeds. There's blood at least every single Monday. I don't think that's necessary. You know, and now you fast forward to today and somebody like Randy Orton accidentally gets cut open with a ladder and bleeds like a steel sieve. And everybody's just like, wow, did you see? Oh, man, he looked like he was hurting real bad. You know, you got to admire a guy like Randy Orton to blah, blah, blah. But you see, that's how it starts. Because you're not lying to the people. If Randy Orton bled every single Monday and Friday, people would be like, "Oh, he's just bleeding again."
We could go back and forth on this all day, but I'm going to give my final thoughts on the Attitude Era. I really think that if it wasn't for the Attitude Era, wrestling today would be in a darker place than it is right now. And plus, I think the Attitude Era was very fortunate that it had a lot of extremely talented individuals at the right time,
right,
to do what needed to be done to make it an exciting story. I mean, the chase with Austin, the hot potato between Mick Foley and The Rock, that was good. Because you really thought to yourself, when Steve Austin was hurt for a little bit, they thought, wow, we don't have Steve Austin to chase the belt.
Right.
What can we do? We need a babyface. And they took a chance with Mick Foley. Now, you know they weren't confident. They probably were thinking, is this going to work?
Right.
Is this going to work? And it worked tenfold.
And they were willing to try.
And they were willing to try, and it worked. And that speaks to not only WWE willing to try new things, which they don't do today, but it also speaks to how talented of an individual Mick Foley is, who if he had doubters before, he didn't have them anymore, with the exception of Ric Flair, of course, but again, another story at a time.
Oh, you mean wrestling's worst wrestler?
Yes.
We could talk about that later if you'd like. And by the way, let's just peel the curtain back real quick. Now, for those of you who actually listened to the Attitude Era portion of this podcast, it wasn't by design, but it makes perfect sense. I didn't really say all that much. I said my point, which was very short, and then Atlee would go on a tangent and talk about how, not that I'm wrong, but he'd give his opposite opinion. But you see, it wasn't by design, but when you really look at it psychology-wise, nobody wants to hear me. They want to hear me badmouth the Attitude Era, and then they want Atlee, a.k.a. the man speaking for every other wrestling fan on the planet, to step in and shut me up, and then I'll just go, yeah, yeah, whatever, and move on to the next thing, and then we'll repeat the process. And that's exactly what we've done. So for all of you Attitude Era fans who think you've won a victory, I still hate most of it. So congratulations for nothing.
And on that note, we're going to wrap up things here at the Body Slam Podcast, right here at Gerwek.net. That is G-E-R-W-E-C-K .net. So a few house cleaning things. At Gerwek.net right now, they have the top Hot 100 poll right now, where you could vote on the hottest women in professional wrestling through various fantasy matchups.
There was 100 women?
Yes, independents, WWE, WCW, ECW, current independent women, you know, a lot of stuff going on. Right now they had, like, I believe, Alicia Fox and Taylor Hendricks is one of the fantasy matchups you can vote on right now. Who would win? Taylor Hendricks is currently winning that vote.
I hope she's on the list, and I just saw her. No, this person I'm about to name. I just saw her on TNA recently, and, I mean, you know, that promotion that used to be TNA, and I got to give it to her because I'm a big fan of that, and I love goth chicks, but Mistress Belmont, I hope something comes of her someday, because I don't know if she's really any good in the ring. I just want more of her in my television, because I'm a fan. Anyway,
but folks, if you want to know what I'm doing outside of Gerwek.net, check out my blog, which is thegreenscreen.net, G-R-E-N-E, like my last name, Atlee Green, thegreenscreen.net, for all blogging stuff on MMA, pro wrestling, movies, comic books, you name it. I blog about it. Check out thegreenscreen.net for stuff I'm doing outside of Gerwek.net. But, folks, I want to thank you for listening for this very long edition of the Body Slam Podcast.
Oh, wait a minute. One more thing, if I'm being a complete shill. Shill it. My band, Familiar Strangers, just put out our new single. It's on iTunes and the Google Play Store. So go look us up. It's Familiar Strangers. The name of the song is Broken Records. And put some money in my pocket, even if I don't. Look, how about this? The Attitude Era was the greatest thing that ever happened to wrestling, and I'm proud to have lived through it. Now buy Familiar Strangers' single.
See, now you're gonna just have people hating you because you have you built a show on a platform that you hate the Attitude Era, and now you just flip flop.
Look, I flip flop for the same reason politicians flip flop, for the same reason everybody flip flops, for the same reason men give in to women 110% of the time. Money. I need money. So feed me, please.
This is true, folks. Keep it locked at thegerwek.net for all of your pro wrestling needs, news, rumors, reports, podcasts. Check out the radio archive, the Gerwek.net report, Frank D. and Steve Gerwek himself, the podcast that keeps it real. Thank the Wrestling Jackal for all the stuff he contributes to the website with all the graphics. Mark Middleton, I love the news updates you're putting on the site on a regular basis. You're doing a great job. Thank you very much. I'm Atlee Green.
And I'm the Messiah of the Backbreaker, Roderick Strong.
And we'll see you next time, folks, on the Body Slam Podcast. Thank you for listening, and good night.